It's 2:40. In sports, a light college basketball schedule tonight. Loyola of Chicago takes on crosstown rival Illinois-Chicago in a Horizon League game. The men of the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign are in action tomorrow at Michigan State. The Illini women are next in action Sunday in Madison against the Badgers. Last night, the Illini fell to fifth-ranked Ohio State, 72-61. Dozens of high school basketball teams in Illinois are wearing uniforms that don't conform to state rules. But the Illinois High School Association says it will not force schools to spend thousands of dollars on new uniforms. The IHSA says it understands money is tight and it will let schools apply for waivers. The Chicago Bulls try for their fourth win in a row tonight at home against the Washington Wizards. The Wizards have dropped 4 of 5 since Gilbert Arenas was suspended. The Washington guard now faces a felony gun possession charge in connection with a locker room confrontation involving a teammate. The Blackhawks are taking the night off after snapping their 2-game losing streak with a 3-0 win over the Columbus Blue Jackets last night in Chicago. The Blackhawks now begin an extended road trip with a game against Columbus in Columbus tomorrow afternoon. That's sports.
Today's programming is made possible in part by Ratio Architects, designers of Carl Foundation's Echo Center, on the web at ratioarchitects.com. Ratio Architects encourages you to join them in supporting WILL.
Pope Benedict will visit Rome's main synagogue on Sunday. The visit comes at a time of Jewish-Catholic tensions. Not all Jews welcome the visit. One of Italy's top rabbis is boycotting the event. NPR's Sylvia Poggioli reports on the long history of the troubled relations.
While workers prepare for the Pope's visit, guided tours of the synagogue are still underway.
The first time that the Jews arrive in Rome, we're talking about 161 before Common Era.
Yael Kalo says Jews arrived here long before the birth of Christ.
We have 22 centuries uninterrupted presence in Rome.
Under papal rule, persecution of Jews alternated with relative calm. Until 1555, when Pope Paul IV ruled they shouldn't prosper alongside Christians. As infidels, he said, God condemned them to eternal servitude. He ordered all Jews in the Rome region be restricted to the 8-acre ghetto. Jews were not allowed to pursue education or practice professions and could leave the ghetto only between sunrise and sunset.
The main occupation for more than 3 centuries for the Jews of Rome was selling used clothes. Shmata, that's the Yiddish word? Okay.
Guide Kalal says Roman Jews were subjected to constant humiliations.
The main reason of the ghetto was not to kill the Jews. The Nazis are going to think about that later. The Pope wanted them to convert to Christianity by letting them live a hard life.
Jews were forced to listen to priests' sermons and at times even forced to convert. The issue of conversion still rankles. A cartoon in an Italian Jewish newspaper shows Benedict crossing the Tiber River on a tightrope, balancing with a pole, the word dialogue at one end, conversion at the other. The paper's editor, Guido Vitale, says these two contradictory aspirations undermine Jewish-Catholic relations.
We heard a variety of Jewish voices, and all agree that dialogue has value only if it's tackled with humility, honesty, and mutual respect, and without the presumption of converting the other.
Several recent moves have upset Jewish-Catholic relations. The revival of an old Latin prayer that calls for Jews' conversion, the lifting of the excommunication of a Holocaust-denying bishop, and Benedict's decision to put his wartime predecessor Pope Pius XII on the track to sainthood. Veteran Vatican analyst Marco Politi says Roman Jews in particular cannot forgive Pius's silence during the Holocaust.
Because during the war, there was a great deportation of Roman Jews, practically directly under the windows of the papal palace. These Jews were kept by the Nazi troops. They stayed 2 days here in Rome, waiting for the train to leave for Auschwitz. And the Pope never spoke. He never said publicly, this has not to happen.
Of the 1,022 Jews rounded up by the Nazis on October 16, 1943, only 16 returned alive. Lisa Palmieri, the American Jewish Committee's liaison to the Vatican, says the Jewish-Catholic dialogue is essential for both sides, and it's crucial that there be no step backward.
It is hoped that the Pope will realize that the Jewish requests regarding Pius XII be honored.
Those requests are that beatification be postponed until the Vatican opens up its archives to independent researchers.
That report was filed by NPR's Sylvia Pajoli. Beer is mostly water, but brewing beer takes even more water. The brewing industry is working to find ways to use less water. Chuck Quernbach reports that for some companies, it's just a matter of becoming more environmentally friendly. For other companies, future water restrictions are forcing them to think about water efficiency.
Step into a sports bar and ask a table of guys drinking beer what they think about using less water to brew beer, and you'll probably get a lot of confused looks.
No, I don't think about it at all. I guess you're the first person to ever even bring it up. That's why I don't think about it.
But the brewing industry says it's not laughing about trying to conserve water. The industry standard is that it takes about 4 barrels of water to make 1 barrel of beer. And that's if you don't factor in things like the water used to grow hops and other crops used in the brewing process. Beer-making giant Miller Coors says it's trying to get its water-to-beer ratio down to 3.5 to 1 within 6 years. So at Miller Brewing's birthplace in Milwaukee, the firm has a research lab working on water efficiency.
And this is a pump turning on.
Troy Reiswick manages the testing lab.
And it's recirculating caustic as the background you hear, it's a pump recirculating caustic.
Reiswick is showing how Miller Coors is testing ways to clean stainless steel brew vats with less water. He says if they can find a solution, it will help the company's bottom line.
So if we can save the amount of water we use and also the amount of chemicals that we use, ultimately don't lose down a drain, that goes a long ways in saving water and also our wastewater that we end up sending to the sewer.
Miller Coors is also trying to use less water as it rinses plastic bottles before they're filled with beer. Smaller brewing companies and even brew pubs say they're also trying to conserve water. Brewers recently held a conference on water conservation. The event also attracted the professionally curious like Thomas Pape.
I kind of invited myself. I heard about this conference, and I had just gone through with my beer club trying to convince steps for them to save water in their home brewing.
Pape is with the Alliance for Water Efficiency. That's a nonprofit group that promotes efficient and sustainable use of water. Pape says the brewers seem serious about conservation because water costs are rising.
It's still a bargain when you think that you still get water from the tap perfectly clean and treated for less than a penny a gallon. But water costs are going up, and they're going to go up and up.
At the conference, a Wisconsin state regulator told the beer makers they need to plan for new requirements for water conservation. Todd Ames says in the Great Lakes states, where a lot of beer is brewed, a recently passed water agreement puts in tough language.
And if you're asking for a newer increased quantity of water out of the Great Lakes Basin, and you can't demonstrate that you are using your current water supply efficiently and that you're going to use that new water supply efficiently, you won't get the water.
If the government holds to that tough line, beer makers that want to grow may have no choice but to conserve water. And that would be fine with sports bar customer Jeff King, who says he does care about conservation.
I might not be as aware of it or look into it exactly, but anything you can do to help out, it's definitely good.
King says he'd even pay more for beer if a brewing company is good at conserving water, as long as it's still a quality brew. For the Environment Report, I'm Chuck Quernbach.
We hope you'll join us this Sunday afternoon at 1 for Media Matters with your host, Bob McChesney. This week, Bob talks with Robin Kelly, author of the book called Thelonious Monk, Life and Times of an American Original. The program was pre-recorded, so no phone calls will be taken. That's Media Matters, Sunday afternoon at 1. This Sunday afternoon at 5, we hope you'll be with us for a broadcast of Keeping the Faith. Each week, host Steve Shoemaker and his guests explore issues of faith, spirituality, religion, and ethics. This week's program is from the archives. Steve's guest is federal judge Joan Humphrey Lefkow, and they discuss her book of poetry, Simple Things. That's Keeping the Faith, Sunday afternoon at 5. Well, the early days of this year have not been boring at NBC. Jay Leno is heading back to his old slot, and the network has announced its plan to fill the 10 o'clock Eastern weeknight slots.
Hey, NBC said they wanted drama at 10. Now they got it.
Jay Leno was right in more ways than one. Some of the shows taking his place are dramas. That led NPR's Netta Ulaby to wonder, what's so special about 10 p.m.?
Once upon a time, a long time ago, NBC ruled 10 o'clock with smart, provocative dramas that became iconic. The very last remnant of that era is a franchise that's almost 20 years old, Law and Order. And the way NBC executives decided to deal with that problem was to radically change directions last year. NBC co-chairman Mark Graboff welcomed Leno to 10 o'clock.
The planets aligned perfectly. This is the right show at the right time with exactly the right person.
Or maybe not.
I think NBC had kind of bet that the era of the 10 p.m. drama was dead.
NBC lost that bet, says Eric Duggins. He covers television for the St. Petersburg Times. The network focused on profit, he says. Talk shows earn less money than dramas from advertisers, but they're amazingly cheaper to produce. People who make TV dramas found this a disturbing trend.
I think we were all afraid that the drama was in trouble.
Kurt Sutter is best known for writing and playing a hitman on the FX drama The Shield.
Rezzy pulled off a power play, taking control of the Armenian operation.
The Shield is one of the 10 p.m. basic cable shows that are, in some ways, this era's Hill Street Blues. They include Damages, Mad Men, Nip Tuck, and Breaking Bad. Recently, cable dramas have started to do something previously unheard of, beating the networks at 10 p.m.
One of the shows that beat Leno in the ratings was Sons of Anarchy on FX.
We feel it would be best for all concerned if you stopped dealing arms to the One-Niners and the Mayans.
Mechanics and Harley lovers.
Sons of Anarchy is one of the better shows you'll see about murderous, gun-running motorcycle gangs. It was created by Kurt Sutter.
The 10 p.m. slot, I think, is traditionally a different tone. Shows with darker nature, violence or sexuality. The idea is that younger viewers are not watching TV after 10 p.m.
10 is a sweet spot. The kids are in bed, but it's still prime time when advertisers pay more. Later does not work, says Michael Wright. He's an executive at TNT and TBS, which produces 10 p.m. dramas like Men of a Certain Age.
It's just impractical on a business level to run an original scripted drama at 11 o'clock.
But it's beginning to matter less when some shows run. Almost 30% of American households use TiVos, or other DVRs. NBC seems to have thought Jay Leno was TiVo-proof. Topical shows have to be watched live in order to talk about them the next day.
Actually, he was totally TiVo-vulnerable.
TV critic Eric Duggins.
People were using the 10 p.m. hour to watch things that they had recorded previously. You know, in my house, my wife records Oprah, and so a lot of times we might be watching Oprah, we might be watching something else in that hour.
Now NBC hopes to make that hour worth watching again. It's only got one new drama ready in time, a show based on the movie Parenthood. The other 10 p.m. spots will be filled with two flavors of Law & Order, Dateline, and a reality show. Netta Ulaby, NPR News.
This week on This American Life.
I used to tell people I was adopted. I had been doing this for years, hoping that somebody would say, oh, you're adopted? Well, how would you like to come and live with me?
And then one day, when she was 8, at a gas station, Sherry got her break. It's This Week.
Saturday afternoon at 1 and Sunday evening at 6.
here on WILL. WILL is a listener-supported broadcasting service of the College of Media at Illinois.
Earth and Sky.
Plastics have been around for perhaps less than 100 years. So in the short span, there hasn't been a group of microorganisms who have evolved who are capable of biodegrading plastics.
You're listening to Anthony Andrade. He's a plastics researcher at RTI International, which offers research and technical expertise to governments and businesses.
This is my concern. In a sense, you are placing all these plastics in the ocean, and eventually they will reach the deep ocean environment.
Dr. Andrade's special interest is the increasing quantity of plastic now known to be in the oceans. He said plastic lasts a long time there because cold seawater slows down the chemical reactions that cause a plastic bottle lying on the beach, for example, to break down.
But if you define biodegradation as the complete conversion of plastics into carbon dioxide and water, all the plastics that we ever put into the ocean, which is over the last 50, 60 years, would still be there in the ocean, and we keep on adding more and more into it, and we do not know what the ecological consequences of this are. They might be very serious.
Earth Sky is a clear voice for science.
We're at earthsky.org.
Support for today's broadcast comes from Warden Martin Subaru in Savoy. Dedicated to preserving our planet, the Subaru Assembly Plant in Lafayette, Indiana, achieves zero landfill status with nothing from its manufacturing efforts going into a landfill. It's part of what makes a Subaru a Subaru. Information at wardenmartin.com or 352-8910.
Mike Sola's forecast for Illinois and Indiana tonight: partly to mostly cloudy with areas of fog, lows ranging from 18 in far northwestern Illinois to 34 in the far south. Tomorrow in the north and in central sections, areas of fog early, otherwise partly to mostly sunny. In the south tomorrow, mostly cloudy with patchy fog early. Highs ranging from 35 in the far north to 48 in the far south. Tonight in Champaign-Urbana, partly to mostly cloudy with patchy fog, low 27, the wind from the west at 3 to 7 miles per hour. Tomorrow, some patchy fog early, otherwise mostly sunny. The high around 40, the wind tomorrow from the southwest to south at 5 to 10 miles per hour. Tomorrow night, partly to mostly cloudy, the low 26. Sunday, partly to mostly sunny, the high 42. Sunday night, partly cloudy, the low 25. Monday, mostly sunny, the high around 40. It's 2 minutes before 3 o'clock, 30.